ये इंटरनेशनल गेम है, इसमें दिमाग से खेला जाता है, गुस्से से नहीं।
हेलो एवरीबॉडी एंड वेलकम टू एपिसोड 10 ऑफ हूप दर्शन।
हूप दर्शन,
यस, स्पेशल एडिशन, इमरजेंसी एडिशन ऑफ हूप दर्शन, नॉट जस्ट टू सेलिब्रेट एपिसोड नंबर 10, नॉट जस्ट टू गेट इनटू डबल डिजिट्स, नॉट जस्ट द फैक्ट दैट वी मे हैव अ स्पेशल गेस्ट हु हैज इट्स ओन विकिपीडिया पेज, नॉट जस्ट बिकॉज ऑफ एनीथिंग, एनी सिंपल रीजन, बट बिकॉज वी हैव एन इंडियन प्लेयर इन द NBA। हाउ अमेजिंग इज दैट, करण?
We have an Indian player drafted in the NBA. Satnam Singh Bhamra. Woo!
Woohoo!
I'm overjoyed right now. This is like... Pinch me, man. Is this even true? Is this really happening?
Unbelievable, right? I was just listening to a video released by the Dallas Mavericks organization, who of course have drafted Satnam Singh, where Mark Cuban describes Satnam Singh. Mark Cuban, owner of one of... the NBA franchise is talking about an Indian dude from Punjab playing for his team. It's unbelievable.
It's insane. It's like little things. Like today I was checking the Wikipedia list of the 2015 NBA draft, and down on number 52, Satnam Singh with an India name and flag next to it.
Yes.
Like, something like that really like gave me goosebumps. I've dreamt of, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be that guy. And when I grew up, I wanted someone else to make it. And I am super happy for Satnam. Satnam was our guest on our podcast just a month ago when he declared for the draft. So we've had now an NBA draftee on our podcast.
Let me
just say that.
Yes, exactly. And not just an NBA player whose TV clip has been recorded on our podcast, but a legit NBA player.
I know. So he's made it. And congratulations to him. Congratulations to the Mavericks for taking this risk. And we'll get much into it. So Kaushik, do you wanna tell our listeners what our episode's gonna be about?
Yes, our episode, if you've not already guessed, is primarily going to be about Satnam Singh. We have a special guest who's related to Satnam. I believe he's known Satnam for as long as you have, isn't it, Karan?
Almost as long. I helped introduce the two. Our guest today is Mark Weingartner. Mark is a freelance writer and a novelist. And the reason we are having him on is because he wrote a huge piece on Satnam for ESPN years ago. When Satnam was coming up, he actually went with Satnam to his village, Baloke, in Punjab. And Mark had been following Satnam's career closely for several years. And he's in the US right now. And he's going to join us to talk a little bit more about the past of Satnam, the future, just everything, whatever we have in our mind, we'll talk about from our point of view about Indian basketball, and he'll bring his expertise about what he's known of Satnam all these years.
Yes, and I think I speak for a lot of people who are listening to this podcast that our first introduction to Satnam Singh, for majority of us who are not as well connected with BFI like someone like you, Karan, was probably this story. And I think someone who's been through what... Satnam's village is, and someone who's followed his progress so closely, I think he can give us a lot of perspective, a lot of really interesting insights. And I'm pretty sure he's as excited as us, even though he has probably no other connection to India. he's as excited that Satnam's finally to the NBA.
Well, let's bring him on and start a conversation. Yep. So here we have Mr. Mark Weingartner. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm tremendous. How are you?
So where are you right now, Mark?
I'm in Tallahassee at home. And I was at the NBA Finals, but I've got a break from my travels right now.
Oh, fantastic. So is that near, because I remember you being in Ohio, right? Is that in Ohio?
No, Tallahassee's in Florida. It's in the panhandle of Florida.
Okay. So did you go to Cleveland for the finals, or were you all the way out in the Bay Area?
No, I just went to the Cleveland games. I was writing, I'm from Northern Ohio, so I was writing a thing for ESPN about just the long the plight of the long-suffering Cleveland fan.
Which continues.
You've been writing about that for a long time as well.
It's definitely true. The last championship we won in any sport was in 1964.
So, Mark,
so I'm 53 years old, so it theoretically happened in my lifetime, but I have no...
Mark, we'll just reintroduce you to our listeners. We talked about you a little bit earlier before you came on, but you obviously are a novelist and a very prolific writer for all over. I think you write about sports, you write about culture, you write about a lot of different things. And I'm actually currently reading The Godfather's Revenge that you wrote, I think, several years ago. So I was halfway through it and this story just came upon again. It was kind of nice to connect with you once more. And you came to India for the first time. How long ago was it, Mark?
Gosh, how long ago was that? About 5 years ago?
Did you meet Satnam after he had begun the IMG Reliance Scholarship or before?
After. I don't recall how I came to be aware of Satnam's story. It was really just probably some little news item. And I'd pitched the story to my editors at ESPN and gone down to meet him in Bradenton. He had not been there very long at the IMG Academy in Bradenton. And, you know, then I think after meeting him, they were convinced that there was a story there. And so then it was really just this incredibly difficult logistical arrangement to try to figure out how to get myself a visa to come to India, figure out when Satnam was coming home. At that point, he was playing for the junior national team. He wasn't on the senior team yet. It wasn't even clear when or if he was going to go home that summer. So it was a huge mess trying to figure out, but I'm so glad I got I stuck with it because it was and remains an amazing story.
Mark, before we go into further detail about your experiences in India, going to Satnam's village, covering the story there, let's talk about draft night. Were you following it? Where were you when you first heard the news? What was the first reaction?
I'm a huge NBA fan. And so I was watching the draft live at home, and I'd gotten contacted by IMG actually to see if I'd be interested in doing a follow-up story. And I'm definitely interested in how the story was progressing. But when I said maybe, I talked to my editors at ESPN, and they said, you know, we don't think, you know, our draft, the people who cover the draft, Chad Ford and guys like that, don't think he's going to get picked. And so there's probably no story there. And I said, well, maybe not. I still think there's some other story. I definitely would like to do a follow-up at some point, but I understand. And so I was just watching it for fun. I found out from IMG that Satnam was actually going to be there in New York, and I thought, man, that's going to be a long few hours there to just sit there in the audience and not get taken. And I saw him, you know, there. He wasn't, obviously we all know now he was there, but I didn't know for sure. And I saw him in the crowd, and I thought, oh, man, it would be great if someone just took him late. Just that's a lot of disappointment. For somebody who's such an outsider to this process to have to deal with, and but it didn't seem very likely. And then, sure enough, you know, when they announced his name, I immediately texted my son, who's 26 years old, lives in Chicago, is a gigantic NBA fan, and you know, immediately texted a whole bunch of friends, thanks, you know, and it was just Satnam exclamation point. they knew what I meant. And, you know, like that. So I followed the story closely enough, you know, that I knew he's a long shot. He remains a long shot, obviously, to make it. But that's, we all love a long shot, man.
Kaushik, what was your first reaction? How are you watching the draft?
Oh, I had just gone for a job interview here, and I was praying that, you know, that finishes fast before the draft begins. Unfortunately, I missed my Lakers getting their first three picks, but I made it just in time for Satnam to have gotten picked. And to be honest, like Mark said, it seemed like a far shot. Looking at all the draft boards and all the draft experts, none of these guys had Satnam in getting picked until the last 2 or 3 days, when the good guys over at Draft Express, Jonathan Givony and guys, they had him on the draft board, and they had him at 51, 52 spot for about a week or so, the last week, and that just gave me a bit of confidence, thinking that maybe, you know, these guys are in the know, they have some intel, some sort of hunch, thinking that, you know, somebody is going to pick him. So I wouldn't say it was totally unexpected on that last day, but the moment it happened, the moment I found out that it was actually true and an Indian was finally picked to play in the NBA, oh man, it was unbelievable. I was jumping with joy, you know, running around in my little house here. Thankfully, nobody saw that, but oh, it's mind-blowing. It still hasn't sunk in. Like,
so there's a good
spoke about, it still hasn't sunk in.
Chance that you...
That's great.
There's a good chance that Kaushik, you and Satnam get a new job at the same time, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I was watching the draft in the morning with some friends, and they stayed till the end of the first round, and then they all left. They're like, we don't really care about what happens after number 30. But I stayed on until, you know, and I, just like you, I was getting pretty anxious as, you know, the 50s came rolled around. But when the Mavericks announced them, the other interesting thing was the Mavericks, among in the last 10 picks, I think the Mavericks were one of the only teams who had actually worked him out.
Yes.
Every other team that worked him out had a pick before, and unless they traded down. So it seemed like they seemed to be the last hope almost. So I'm glad they picked him, and they picked, they drafted the first Indian player just like they drafted the first Chinese player, Wang Zhiji, 16 years ago. So they made history in two different fronts.
Yep. Mark, what do you think it means for India as a nation to have somebody potentially playing in the NBA? We know he's not there yet, but just to get drafted, I think is a huge step for our country as a whole. What do you think it means for India?
I think, yeah, it's a wonderful kind of watershed moment. You know, that his whole story, I feel like in some ways it's a lot bigger than he is.
That's saying something.
Yeah, well, that's right, exactly. You know, there was such promise with the program that brought, you know, all those kids over to IMG, and pretty quickly it was clear none of them were going to pan out to have an NBA future except Satnam. And you know, there are other kids. I hope there are other young kids. You don't have to be 7 feet tall. There could be a great 6 foot tall player, you know, make it someday. But I think that you know, the kid was Satnam was on, you know, path where there was a chance, and the first kid who really looked like there was a chance, however small, of making it actually got drafted. You know, I think it probably, for a lot of people in India who love basketball or who are curious about basketball, it makes it seem possible. I mean, you've never had anybody ever make it. You know, even to get this far, I think makes it you guys could answer it better than I could, but I imagine for kids who love basketball, it makes it seem like it's not a stupid waste of time to pursue the sport, that there's real hope that it will grow. And while, you know, I don't think his ceiling is probably very high as a player, that he's gotten this far at all is a miracle.
Yeah, indeed, it is a bit of a miracle, especially even considering that he had the size and the physical gifts. The NBA is still the rarest of the rare. Like, you have to be just the absolute elite on earth on basketball to be that good.
But, you know, that's true. But I think, you know, from the standpoint of somebody who, you know, who's grown up with basketball and seen it, he's an incredible outsider by the context of Indian basketball. And then he doesn't really play in the Indian system very long, and he comes over here. but he's an outsider here because he doesn't play AAU ball. He's at IMG. He doesn't play a lot of regular high school games. He, he was, that little village he's from is, is very, very remote by the standards of, guys like you who, were in major cities and had excellent educations. He was a very backwards kid with a lack of education. If he had been fluent in English when he came to the U.S., he still would have been probably 4 years behind grade level in terms of his formal education. And that's leaving the language barrier aside. And as you know, Karin, from talking to him, he barely spoke Hindi. I mean, his Punjab is extremely heavily accented, in country. So even if you speak some Punjab, he's hard to understand. His Hindi is not strong. His English at that point was non-existent. And he's from, up by the Pakistan border. He's just in as almost as remote a place as you can be in the entire world. And, there were this, Like if the NBA were located in Delhi and Mumbai, his culture shock would have been enormous. To go and then to come to the U.S., it was just unbelievably enormous. I think from the waist up, he's an NBA player. And from the waist down, he's not. He's just tall and clumsy. He's got a surprisingly nice stroke. I mean, I just think I don't think that people in the U.S. will ever really understand the degree to which he's not just somebody from India. Like it's not like somebody, let's just say one of you guys were 7'1" and could play a little, whatever the culture, you guys have traveled, the cultural gaps wouldn't have been as huge. This guy couldn't be, like more country. And he, had he only had to move from Balakay to Delhi, it would have been an enormous adjustment. And to have to do all that and move toward being the NBA, it's just, I feel like it's an astonishing fairy tale that just keeps going.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and as you mentioned about him, even coming to Delhi, I remember those first few days, first few times when I met him. He was 14, and he had come from his village to Delhi for the trials, and he would travel with the Indian youth teams to go to various different towns for the national tournaments. And as you mentioned, even going to a semi-urban Indian city was a huge change for him from where he was from, because he comes from a straight up farm. I don't think back then there were only 600 people in that village. I think now I've read the population's up to 1,000 or 2,000, but it was about 500 or 600 back then. His dad was a farmer. I think you've been to his home. He had broken torn shoes. I remember a story where I think he had to stitch a part of a different shoe in front of on the sole of one of the shoes he had, because he couldn't afford to buy a new one. And one of the more astonishing stories I remember about Satnam was, because he used to take those local buses from his village to Delhi, and or maybe not even exactly to Delhi. Probably have to take that bus to the nearest Punjabi town, the nearest Punjabi city, and then from there to Delhi.
Oh, he went to Ludhiana to the academy there.
The academy. And that's all he could afford back then. He could only afford those local buses. Now I've taken those buses in India, and I'm 5'10" and a half, and they're tough for me. And this kid was already a 7-footer. So
yeah.
And I remember he used to ask people for tips for when they want to take photos with him. People didn't know who he was, but just because he's 7-foot tall, he was that poor. He needed those extra 50 rupees to be in someone's photograph. And it's incredible for me, to see the same kid now up there with Mark Tatum shaking the deputy commissioner's hand. and wearing a Dallas Mavericks hat. It's quite an incredible story. Tell us about his village when you were there. How was that experience for you?
Wow. I remember, working backwards in the story. Like when I got back to Delhi, you were among the several people from Delhi, but who came up to me and said, like, "What was it like?" And I've said this so often to people back in the States, like that, you don't understand how remote this village is. Like people who are born and raised in India would never have any reason to travel anywhere close, to this place. And so we take this, I chartered rented a car and a driver, and we drive, we stay overnight in Ludhiana, and then I didn't think it didn't look that far on the map, from there, but we just kept driving and driving and driving, and we got and of course, Satnam at the time didn't drive. So we're dealing with his directions to try to find this little town, and the farther we got in the country, the more useless my translator was, because it was just became more and more sort of vernacular Punjabi spoken. It was harder and harder to understand, and
I
Satnam
think you were
was.
there with Karan Talwar, right? I think he helped you out with the
Yeah,
story.
yeah, 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 and he did a great job. I mean, I'm no way criticizing him, but it was a hard
It's a
job,
different
because
language.
really,
It's a different language for him too. It's Punjabi,
yeah,
so.
yeah. It's, I think yeah, I think his parents spoke were from Punjab, and his Punjabi was pretty good, but it was challenging, and nobody really knew where we were going. We just kept going farther in the countryside and farther in the countryside, and the roads got narrower and narrower, and we were driving between rice paddies, and first they look like sort of dirt roads, and then they look like trails, and then they look like the car is surely going to tilt sideways off of the berm and go and just and turn upside down inside, and we'll be all be submerged in a rice paddy. And then it got narrower than that, and finally we get to this village, and I'm not exaggerating, I think this was in my story, it had been every bit of half an hour, maybe an hour, since I had seen any building with screens or glass in the doors or windows. And there's this little, walled town, surrounded by farmland. And Satnam's dad was the elected head of the village, so he's kind of a big man there in this little tiny village. But man, it looks like the whole village looks like one big farm. I mean, it to call it a town is kind of an exaggeration. And so, relative to this town, Satnam's family is prominent, and clearly respected. And so we go in there, we pull up, and there's this, we pull in this courtyard, and there's this basket mounted to that. You guys have probably seen the pictures. There's this basket mounted to the stone wall, in this courtyard. The house, the rooms are sort of arranged around this courtyard. Again, there are no screens or glass in any of the doors or windows. There's, there's a bunch of water buffalo in like the room, kind of adjoining where the family sleeps, and like, just the, I mean, really, like, as if they're part of the family. I don't really drink tea that much, hot tea, and I. When I do, I don't put milk in it. And they offered me tea, and I wanted to be polite, and I took it, and I said, "Oh, okay." And they said, "Do you want milk in it?" And I said, "Oh, no, thank you." And then Karan Talwar like elbowed me and said, "Oh no, you want this?" And I said, "Yes, I want it." Oh my God! It was just it was so sweet and delicious, and probably been milked about 3 minutes earlier, and was just amazing, people gradually said, the villagers were curious about us and, you know, gradually started, you know, walking in to see what was going on. So people were wondering, you know, the other people in the village were curious. They don't get a lot of visitors there, clearly. And just the fact that someone comes in a rented car, big enough for four people was cause for some commotion, and that Satnam was home. Even as a kid, he was becoming something of a celebrity there. So, one of the most astonishing things as people started to walk in, the front room in their house, I guess, there's the Skype feed and the computer. So as remote as that place is, they had a satellite dish and a computer and three little chairs sitting right in front of it so that they could communicate with him. And I found out later that, like, when they would have calls with him, they call him in Florida, people from the village would just sort of wander in, and a lot of them had never, you know, seen Skype in action, or, you know, it was like an amazing miracle to them. And they sort of like stick their head in front of the camera, like, hello, you know, say, hello, hello in Florida, you know, and with very little understanding of, you know, I mean, these primitive country people, I mean, they barely know what Florida is, and they certainly, you know, they can't understand what basketball or the NBA is. And just, you know, how far he's come from where, you know, from that place to where he is now. It's just, it's very difficult to understand if you haven't really, really seen the distance, you know, of that.
So, Mark, you spoke about the quintessential Indian experience of having milk tea, chai, and whatnot. how was your food experience in India?
Oh my God.
Especially Punjab. Well, I believe people think of that place to be probably the best for Indian food.
Definitely. So, did you have any butter chicken?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I did. I mean,
of course.
I gotta say, the food that I had, I mean, just from beginning to end was outstanding. I mean, I had. It's kind of cheating to be an American and had the experience that I had in terms of food, because I had, you know, so I flew in, right, and I stayed at a nice hotel, so that makes it easy. Karin, you were a great guide and pointed me in the right direction for some things. And then I went out of the way while being guided by a native in the countryside to, you know, to eat at some really out of the way places I would have never, you know, the people who aren't from India would never get anywhere close to. So it was a great combination of sort of high end restaurants in Delhi, you know, combined with a really humble, delicious, you know, food that you know, as an outsider, you really wouldn't stumble upon.
All right, Mark, just a couple of questions on what we think will happen to Satnam going forward. I think it's pretty clear that he's not in a position to contribute right away. It's very, very far away from it.
Yeah.
What do you think happens to him? Do you think he goes to the D-League? And what sort of a timeline are you looking at?
I mean, I think that's the interesting... one of the interesting aspects of this is that really he's always been a pawn of the system. You know, he's sort of, you know, this naive outsider. And I think those circumstances are so overwhelming that it's difficult for him to see much farther than what's immediately in front of him. As a result, he's clearly worked very hard. He's gotten much, much, much stronger. His upper body strength is ridiculously improved from when I was around him. His shooting touch is much, much better. His footwork is, as bad as it is now, is astonishingly better than it was. and he, you know, he's still going to really struggle, I think, to be, you know, to contribute. It would have been great if he could have played, you know, 2 or 3 years of college ball here. If he could have been, I mean, yes. I think it was unrealistic given how far behind he was academically from talking to people at IMG. It was always a little unrealistic mm-hmm. that he could qualify academically to play college ball. Mm-hmm. And then I think, the fear was that if he played in Europe, well, we were talking about this earlier today, like he'd already struggled with the culture shock of coming to the U.S. to have to move to Italy or Spain yes. after this was going to, maybe that wasn't going to be a realistic transition for him anyway. Plus, I think there's real concerns about the politics of the Indian Sports Federation that I think his handlers would like to give him some distance from just for his own sake. So I think, that doesn't give him, I mean, I think Europe's still a possibility, but I think it's pretty certain if he does okay, even this summer, that they'll put him in the D League, for a year or two and hope for the best. And I still don't think just having seen him, just film of him playing recently, I can't imagine him going from where he is now to playing meaningful minutes in the NBA. He's 19. He's not really super young anymore. But by the same token, yep. I can imagine him getting a few. I mean, I can definitely imagine him playing briefly in the NBA. I can imagine him being a back of the an end of the bench guy in the NBA. I can imagine him getting to the point where he ping pongs back and forth between the D League and the NBA. That's what I meant before when I said I think his ceiling is pretty low. On the other hand, to come from where he's been to do that is just it's a miracle. I mean, and that doesn't sound like that impressive, except for that it's unbelievably difficult to be to get to that point. And I mean, I think there's some concern. Definitely, what the thing I heard from other people in the draft, I wasn't in the draft room, but that I heard secondhand from people in the draft room was that if anyone took him, it was going to be a publicity stunt in order to make, to sell Dallas Mavericks jerseys in India and the teams that were likeliest to do it were teams with some either, awareness and, that it was the Kings or the,
the enterprising nature.
Right.
Like Cuban.
Right, Kings. Right. But I think a lot of people thought the Kings would too. The franchise either with a real enterprising entrepreneurial sense or with some sort of connection to India or Southern Asia, would be interested in doing it just almost as a cynical marketing ploy. And that may well be what yep. happened. But I feel like Saddam has just, he's been like this feather who's sort of blown on the winds of increased basketball interest in India, much like Forrest Gump or Chauncey Gardner from the movie Being There. It's like, this gigantic kid, but he's also, very innocent. And, I think, he's benefiting from, yes, I think probably he is being exploited by the system, but it's a good problem to have given where he's come from. And, I don't think he's being, again, when you see what humble beginnings he's come from, it's not as if he's being removed from luxurious circumstances to have a shot to play in the D League. I think here a lot of players think, that going to the D League is some sort of a punishment or some sort of purgatory or hell even. And I think coming from where this kid has come from, the D League is going to seem like heaven.
Yep. And you hit it right on the head there that perhaps it's too soon or even too far-fetched to imagine him contributing meaningful minutes. But like you said, just the fact that he's gotten to where he is today, and I think current stresses in previous episodes of our podcast as well, The fact that he's gotten to where he is today from where he was, I think that's a huge success story in itself. And for all you know, this kid's been punching above his weight for as long as we know in terms of, you know, life success stories. And who's to say he won't continue doing that again? So it's just he's in a good place, and if things work out with luck, injuries, and maybe some skill improvement, maybe someday, you know, we do get to see him be that last man of the bench, or even if that
he's
that's
come
what
so far already. And the thing that I was the most impressed by when I watched him play, when I first saw him play, was that he has a soft shooting touch, which isn't what you'd expect for a big man. That unexpected aspect of his game is why I think he's actually got a hope to exceed expectations. That, you know, the way that Manute Bol had a weirdly effective outside shot, I think he's actually, you know, with more training and so forth, like, I think he actually has a chance to be a kind of bizarre, gimmicky outside threat for an NBA team who can give him a few minutes here and there. And, you know, if he could just get a little more, just a little bit more graceful on his feet, and enough that he could, that you could let him play inside and be a rim protector for a very few minutes a year, and then pop, if he could pop out to make threes, I think he's actually has an NBA, a legitimate NBA 3-point shot that I didn't see coming. What I saw, you know, when I saw him play last in person is, oh, this guy is a big man who's not going to be a liability, on the foul line, and might actually have a nice little, turnaround 10-footer. But he's got a legitimate NBA 3 now, and that opens up possibilities that I don't think many people saw coming.
Well, especially the direction that the NBA is taking now, where almost everyone has to have some sort of range. It helps to, again, as you said, like, he may not be a game changer, but it'll help to have that as an option, as a guy who can, who's strong enough to defend the strongest guys in the post, but can then stretch the floor and make other big guys uncomfortable by taking them out.
You know, the amazing thing is, like, almost no one's, you guys may have seen him play some. Here's a guy who's trained, you know, kind of behind the scenes. In the U.S., the IMG Academy is sort of where people go for like an extra year or something. There's hardly anybody who's seen him play, and he's played mostly against, you know, second-rate high school competition. The best competition he's played is the international competition that you guys have seen, but people in the States haven't seen that. Even then, he hasn't played an enormous number of minutes and against that kind of competition. So the big issues are things that, like, I'm hoping to get ESPN. I very much would like to write, you know, the next chapter of this story. And I've been talking to my editors there, and I'd like to go to the Las Vegas, Summer League, which will be his first, which will be by far the best competition he's ever played against, and see some aspects of his game. But there's some huge unknowns about what he can do, because he hasn't played against the kind of competition where we have any means of guessing, of assessing that. For example, can he actually move well enough to execute an NBA level pick and roll, right? You know, at his size, he only really needs to be able to finish, but he needs to be able to fight through a pick. He needs to be able to actually set a pick, and move away from it. That, you know, just all the intricacies and athleticism of executing an NBA level pick and roll. It's not, nobody knows. He hasn't played that kind of competition. Is he going to embarrass himself, you know, doing that, or can he actually hold his own? If he can hold his own, you know, just doing, you know, sort of simple in the lane, close to the basket things, but, you know, but if he can even be just a mildly below average big man in the pick and roll, well, now we're talking about something, because I think it's pretty clear he's going to be able to shoot a wide open shot than the pick and roll. It's just that, can he move quickly enough to actually be open? And that's, I don't think anybody has a clue whether, I don't think his agent knows, you know, I don't think the people from IMG know. I don't think the Mavericks know. I think what we're going to see in Las Vegas is him playing against a completely different level of competition than he's ever seen. And he's going to be the only kid in Las Vegas about whom that's true. Every other kid in Las Vegas will have played, you know, elite high school, elite college basketball, or they've been in the NBA for a year already, or you know, they've played in China or in Europe, and you know, Satnam played against high school kids in Florida, you know, and a smattering of international play for the Indian national team, which isn't, you know, relative to the really elite national teams, isn't, you know, it's okay, it's getting better, but it's not like playing for the, you know, U.S. national team or the Italian or Spanish national team. So it's going to be quite a debut for him from anything anybody's ever seen. He's just one of these guys that people have only seen on film, by and large.
Yeah, Mark, I agree with you about that. Really, it'll be in the summer league, and then what'll happen in the D League will really kind of begin to shape what he eventually becomes as a player, for now at least, because that's when he'll finally go against top-level talent, or at least almost top-level talent.
And I
also think that...
I think that's true. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I also think that, like, what you said, like, his inexperience will show straight away. Like, I actually don't have a very good feeling about the first few months, like, the Summer League and the beginning of the D-League. I don't think he will get to play that much. I don't think he'll have the pace and endurance to keep up with the game as much. But I think that will improve as time goes on. And I mean, I'm a glass half full kind of guy. I think by the end of this season of the D-League, he may be good enough to earn, you know, bench splinters for the Mavericks next year.
Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of the Mavericks, Mark, I just wanted to get your idea of what do you think the Mavericks were thinking while doing this. I read an article that said that Cuban thought, after a list of guys that they had on their list, with whom were already drafted, he didn't see any particular value add for someone to contribute immediately in this year's rotation. So why not take a flyer on somebody like him? So do you feel like this is a long-term project from there, and the whole business perspective that we spoke about a few minutes ago, what do you think was the Mavericks' perspective in this whole decision? They were, like Karan mentioned, the first team to get
Cuban into the NBA as well. Mark Cuban is a charismatic, entrepreneurial guy. He's an operator, and if this is a little bit of a stunt, it wouldn't be the first time. On the other hand, he's always, you know, he was the Mavericks were the first team in the NBA to have a charter plane for the team. Every single team in the NBA has that. That was Mark Cuban thinking, why are we, you know, they used to fly. I mean, as recently as, you know, when Michael Jordan was in the NBA, they flew on commercial flights often. You know, that's not that long ago. They didn't always. They flew charters here and there. Now every single team in the NBA has its own airplane, you know, tailored for these super tall guys. So, you know, on the one hand, you do that because it's like, oh, it's just a gimmick. Cuban thinks that people want to play for the Mavericks because they've got their own plane. No one's going to want to play for a team unless they're winners, blah, blah, blah. It's just a stupid gimmick. Well, you know what? He was a trendsetter, and he was ahead of his time. Likewise, he had the first Chinese player, and that was ahead of its time. And look at where Chinese basketball is now. You know, that one player just set things in motion. There still haven't been an enormous number of Chinese players in the NBA, but certainly in China, the caliber of basketball is ridiculously better than it was. And I think we've got to be honest about the possibility that to some degree this may have been a cynical gimmick on Cuban's part to take Satnam. But it's a good problem to have from Satnam's perspective. It's a great problem to have from Indian basketball's perspective. And I think, if they're going to be committed enough to do it at all, they're going to be committed enough not to cut him. I mean, that's what I'm kind of hoping, is that he doesn't – where I'm holding my breath is that I just hope he doesn't do so poorly in Las Vegas that they just think, oh, man, this guy can't play at the D-League level. He's just too far away. We can't do anything with him. I hope they're patient enough to at least let him play there, because this is how the D-League was supposed to work, but isn't how it works. The D-League should be like this sort of minor league where every team in the NBA has its own D-League team, and you draft guys who aren't quite ready, but you keep them down there for a while and you develop them and you hope they're going to be something later. Instead, it's just a place, guys bounce around. There's, NBA teams only use the D-League for elite players if they're super young and the team's really good and they just need to give them some playing time, and they'll be down there for a few weeks and they'll come back up. But for guys who absolutely cannot play in the NBA at all, that they're 2 or 3 years away from being able to do that, that's not how NBA teams use the D-League, and that is what's going to be necessary with Satnam. The way NBA teams treat players like Satnam is they stash them in Europe. And there's a bunch of that going on, where you draft a guy who's not ready. Cleveland drafted a kid who's skinny and, Latvian, and probably 2 or 3 years away, and they don't – Cleveland doesn't need him. They just want him to play over there, and they'll bring him over when he gets to a certain point. And so it'll be interesting to see if Dallas is patient enough with Satnam to treat him the way that people do draft and stash guys in Europe. But it's not how the NBA is using that now, and I think they should. I mean, I think it's a missed opportunity for the NBA, and I think, this is a long subject, but I think the way the NCAA is going and the need to pay guys and their exploitation, I think that college basketball is going to, in the U.S., is going to at a certain point kind of implode, and the D-League is I think, destined to take on a much bigger role than it does now. So maybe Satnam can be ahead of the curve in that regard as well.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That the D-League can fill a void, yeah. That, but that's a whole different topic, as you mentioned. So, Mark, just wanted to say thank you for joining us today, and I hope that you can fly to Las Vegas, cover the story, or the second part of the story, like you mentioned.
My pleasure. I'm so in this kid's corner, and I'm glad it's a pleasure to talk with you guys.
Thank you for giving us your time, staying up late. And just like Kaushik said, I hope that you're there again for the next big moment in this kid's life.
Yeah, if there's any news on that front, I'll keep you guys posted.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Take care.
Okay. You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
So that was Mr. Mark Weingartner and Weingartner.
Yep.
And I'm overjoyed that he was able to kind of agree to do this last minute with us. He's obviously, as you guys heard, someone who's followed Satnam's career very closely, and he's literally been to where Satnam was born and bred up and where he learned his game, and all the way through he covered that, and he'll be in Cleveland covering the NBA finals. So here's a guy with a complete range of basketball, NBA, and a little bit of India basketball information. So I hope we can keep turning to him in the future for more stories on the Satnam NBA end.
Absolutely. I think he gave us a lot of interesting perspective about how Satnam's journey is as miraculous as it is already. Even though, it probably to an outsider, it doesn't seem like much. Even if he probably doesn't make it, it'd be like, oh, he's just got drafted, what more? But given what he's achieved, where he's come from, I can't stress it enough. I think it's a miracle.
Yeah, and he did, like, I spoke about this to him earlier too, and then he mentioned it in the podcast today. that there is a bit of cynicism that obviously that it could be a marketing ploy.
Yep.
But, you know, the unfortunate situation is that really the first Indian player in the NBA was always going to be a market. Like, there's no situation in which
yep.
someone would not have said that, you know, unless, I mean, when Wang Zhizhe was first drafted by the Mavericks, some considered that to be a marketing ploy too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Yao Ming went number one and he was a superstar and he was going to go number one in any situation. But generally, when every other Chinese player who's come to the NBA, even Yi Jianlian, who went, I think, six, went way higher than he should have. Guys like Sun Yue, who were picked by the Lakers, like everyone gets a little bit overrated when there's a little bit of a marketing ploy in behind.
Yes.
I was thinking about Kobe Bryant. The fact that the Lakers chose to throw a lot of money to keep him a few extra years wasn't for his talents. It was to keep the fans coming. And that's just part of the game. It's a business. And the fact that Satnam is good enough to even be considered for a marketing ploy, you
yeah.
know, is a win, honestly. It's here's a situation where this is a kid who people from all different eras of life who met him are now trying to revel in his glory, you know.
Yeah.
So India basketball is celebrating him. The Punjab chief minister is celebrating him. The Ludhiana Basketball Academy is taking credit. And it's ridiculous. Like, sure, everyone helped him on his path. IMG helped him a lot on his path. But he did most of this by his own determination and hard work. And,
yes.
Like, if the majority of the credit belongs to him.
Absolutely, absolutely. Started from the bottom.
Started from the bottom, now he's here. And I mean, you've seen those photos of him in the farm and then him being next, shaking hands with the deputy commissioner. That's a huge deal.
Absolutely, absolutely. What about the rest of the draft, though? You liked what your Knicks did?
Do you want to hear a sad lullaby song? I don't know. You want to hear? You want me to cry right now on the draft? I did not like the Kristaps Porzingis pick at all. I would have picked Moutier. I know he's also a project, but you know, whatever.
It is what it is with the Knicks, yeah.
It is what it is, and if Kristaps turns out to be the next Dirk Nowitzki, then all hail Phil Jackson, and I will hold my tongue, but. For now, I think it was not a good choice. I did like the Knicks, the trade they did for Tim Hart. They got rid of Tim Hardaway Jr. and bought in Grant.
Yep.
So I think he'll be a decent player. But your Lakers got... well, first, the Timberwolves got Karl Anthony Towns, which was a solid
Obvious.
Pick. I think not surprising at all.
Yep.
But bit of a surprise for your Lakers to take D'Angelo Russell at 2.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was thrilled upon hearing this news. I wouldn't have been too disappointed if they picked Okafor either, but something about Russell made me feel like, you know, he's a special guy. He's got that swagger about his game. He's got that superstar. The way he carries himself seems like a superstar, and I think that'll fit really well with Lakers. And for all that people said about, you know, whether the NBA is changing, whether what do you do with Julius Randle in the team? Lakers have always been built on big men. I think all that was a secondary reason, if at all it was. I think that the Lakers picked who they feel was the best available player, and I completely agree that it's probably Russell. I can't wait for the Summer League to start to watch these guys play.
Yeah, I think you always pick the best player available and then see what happens. I mean, Russell could still be a pawn in a potential DeMarcus Cousins trade. So
yes.
there's always... But yeah, you always... speaking of the always taking the best available... That's what the Philadelphia 76ers are doing, right? They're just hoarding up.
Yes, they have like six or seven centers in their team and nobody else.
They have like 25 big men, you know, 25 guys who are 6'9 and above. Dario Saric is 6'9 or 6'10.
Yep.
Or Embiid, Noel, and then all their second round picks were also power forwards and centers. So,
they're bucking the trend against small ball, huh?
They're bucking the trend against logic and common sense as well, so.
That they've been doing for a while.
For a while. The Knicks took Kristaps. I really like Mario Hezonja.
Yes.
Hezonja?
Yes, Hezonja.
Hezonja going number 5 to
oh,
Orlando.
Man.
That's a great fit for them.
That
I
guy's
think he'll
like,
be a star.
That guy's like European Kobe Bryant. That's
He is. The best scouting report I've heard on him is that he's got the attitude of Kobe and the game of Klay Thompson. And I
Yes.
like that a lot. I just love that scouting report.
Yep, it's amazing. And there's been moments where he's single-handedly. I've only watched him when Madrid plays Barcelona, of course. And he's shot like six threes in 3 minutes. That's the kind of
Yeah,
thing he can
he's
do.
crazy. Yeah. The Kings took Willie Cauley-Stein at six, which
That was a bit weird, I thought.
yeah, it's the Kings. I mean, what are they doing? Come on,
I've
Vivek.
lost
Fix
hope in
house.
I've lost hope in Vivek. He seems like a one of those type of owners who'll always give you entertainment stories.
And number seven is my main man, Emmanuel Mudiay, who I did a slam story on a few months ago. He's ended up in Denver, which means the end of the Ty Lawson era.
I don't think so. I think they can play together.
You think they'll play together?
I think they'll play together at least for a few years till they figure out whether which one of them they want to keep going forward, an expensive Ty Lawson or a project in the day. I think they can still do. A lot of teams play with two ball handling guards, two not necessarily shooting guards. They all sorts of combination is possible. And that's Denver is a situation where you always tend to push and play fast, right? That's what
That's
competitive
true.
advantage is there. You can easily play
So,
with two guards.
let's just summarize the rest of the draft. Any other picks that you really liked? Any other fits that you liked?
I think that from what I've heard and seen of Justice Winslow, Justice spelled Justise, like how Dwayne is spelled Dwayne. I can't even spell that. So I think that'll be a good pick for Miami.
Yeah, Pat Riley just lucked up. He's got a way to luck his way into luck, or just I don't know. He's got the aura around him
Yes,
on
fate.
to get his way into success somehow.
Yep.
So
Yeah.
if they can keep Wade and re-sign Dragic, like that is an incredible team.
Yes,
That
absolutely.
team could really finally bring some entertainment back into the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it'll be fun if they and Cleveland match up sometime in the playoffs next year. Apart from that, I can't really say that I know too many players or too much about these guys. But I do think that that Indian kid who got drafted by Dallas Mavericks, I think he can be a star.
Oh, that kid, yeah, he's headed to big things. By the way, I didn't mention this earlier, but when he got drafted, an hour after he got drafted, because it was already, by the time the second round draft finished, it was already almost noon my time. So the first thing I did was order butter chicken. Of course I
Yes.
did. So I had butter chicken for lunch, butter chicken for dinner, had to celebrate.
That butter chicken still exists now?
Of
Still
course not.
celebrating?
That was finished within a day. We've been talking about Satnam this whole while. Let's just quickly touch on what happens back home. What happens in Indian basketball? Our national team, in about 3 days, if you guys have been keeping up with the news, are going to play in the South Asian Basketball Association qualifiers, where we play against teams like Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, so our South Asian rivals, maybe Nepal as well. And we are hosting this tournament in Kaushik, your hometown. It's in Bangalore.
Yes.
Um,
Wish I could have
and,
been there, but
and,
unfortunately.
and, and India has been in camp for about 3 to 4 weeks. A lot of players have been. Satnam was named as one of the probables. He was never going to make it. And so were Amjot Singh and Amritpal Singh, but they won't be there either because they're both in Japan playing in the
Taken their
BJ Summer
talents
League.
to Japan.
They've taken talents to Japan. Vishesh, who is our national team, I mean, our ex-captain and one of the most, probably a most talented guard, is injured, so he's unlikely to play. And I'm hearing rumors that Yadvinder Singh may not play either. So, wow, like this is going to be a very depleted Indian side. And I know we're going against teams which have historically been much weaker than us, but I think Sri Lanka, for example, are smelling blood right now.
Yes. I think that Sri Lanka, whenever I've seen them play, I've seen them, their under 18 teams play, I've seen their men's team play. They can hang with us for about one quarter. And if you're talking about depleted team, I think they always play with that chip on their shoulder, that kind of a mentality. A lot of these teams, in fact, I'm sure will be like that. And it's not going to be a cakewalk at all. And I think they also, Indian team also realizes that should they make it to the FIBA Asia tournament after winning this, they have a reasonably favorable draw, in my opinion. We
We do.
just saw, I believe, this weekend, the past weekend that just went by, Iran, Malaysia, and Lebanon, is it? In our team, in our group?
Our group is, I am just checking that. My memory is
I know Iran was the team that. No, it's Iran, Japan, and Malaysia, of course.
is Iran, Japan, Malaysia. So, I mean, we should be, I think we match head to head with Malaysia pretty evenly.
Yep.
Iran are one of the two best teams in Asia.
Yes.
Japan are somewhere in between. So they are like, if in this tournament we are at the very bottom and China's at the very top, Iran are right in the, I mean, sorry, Japan are right in the middle.
Yes.
So
It
we'll
might take
need.
our best effort to beat them, but it's still going to be, I think it's one of the better situations we've been in. And if I'm not mistaken, three teams go through to the next round.
Well, yeah, so we'll have to beat just one team, but we have many problems back home. We don't have a head coach right now. So that is, in basketball, kids, teams need a coach.
Yes. There's your life advice for the day.
ever since Scott Fleming left the Indian national team and the Basketball Federation of India has been in complete disarray, which we won't harp on because we've been harping on for months.
Again and again.
And I we may have some interim coaches or some like trainers down there with the team, but there's not a proper or at least I don't know of it, a head coach for a tournament that's starting in 3 days. So I hope we qualify. Our strength is usually our bigs, but Amjot and Amritpal aren't there, so our backup guys will have to take over and do their job. I think we're good enough to make it, but once we do get to Japan, we are gonna need, sorry, not Japan,
The
I mean
China.
once we do get to China for the FIBA Asia Championship, we'll need our two big men who have been playing in Japan. And since you're playing Japan in one of the tournament in one of the games at the FIBA Asia Championship, maybe they'll have some scouting reports for us.
Yes, that's right. Before we finish off today's episode, Karan, we have the NBA free agency coming up. Are you expecting any bombshells?
LaMarcus Aldridge is gone, and I can kind
Where
of,
to?
That is the million-dollar question, man. I would not be surprised if he goes to the Spurs and kind of for Timmy's one last run.
Yes.
Honestly, I'm gonna write this article in a few days, maybe a week. I think every single Western Conference free agent should just go east, and if you're a free agent in the east, stay east.
Is
Like,
this your way of recruiting LaMarcus Aldridge to New York?
I would love him to be in the Knicks, but even if he doesn't, like I just want a balanced NBA. You know, like it annoys me every year when you see the playoffs and all of a sudden the East looks like a joke, and in the West you have Spurs and the Clippers in the first round. It's a joke. I want like Aldridge and DeMarcus Cousins but if he wants to force a trade, and Marc Gasol's not leaving Memphis, but Kevin Love to stay East. You know, I want these guys to all think about that option. I want Jimmy Butler to stay East, and I know he's giving the Lakers some hope.
Nah, he's just using them to get a contract.
Yeah, he's doing the Sergio Ramos Manchester
Yes.
United thing, basically.
Yes.
But that's what needs to happen. I think just to bring some competitive balance back. I heard today that the Knicks are the front runners for Greg Monroe and Aaron Aflalo, which is
Really depressing.
like being a front runner in a race no one else is running. So good job. But what do you think? Do you see any big movers and shakers?
No, probably LaMarcus Aldridge is the biggest one. I think that we could see DeAndre Jordan moving. I think that my Lakers could be one of the destinations for DeAndre Jordan. I wouldn't be too surprised. Not his biggest fan, but I think he's a good piece in trying to build the next competitive squad that Lakers haven't had for quite a while. But apart from these guys, I don't think so. I think LeBron, even though he's opted out, it's all salary cap funder that's just too hard to interpret. It's just he's going to come back there for a lot more money. That's it.
Well, what about Kevin Love? What do you think he does?
I think he stays for 1 year again. Like
Okay.
LeBron, he'll probably wait out to, see whether he really whatever to prove himself. Like I believe Harsh is the one who suggested this on one of our previous episodes that he feels like even though the Cleveland Cavaliers went to the finals, quote unquote, without him, he belongs in that. So I think he'll do that, but probably eventually move away. What do you think happens to Kevin Love?
My prediction is, and I think he leaves, and I'm gonna make a bold prediction now. So write this down in a week or so. You guys can look back at this great historical prophetic moment from me. He's gonna end up in Portland to replace LaMarcus Aldridge. He's
Yep,
gonna
I've
be
heard that. That's
because
very interesting.
I think he went to high school over there and he has
Yeah.
ties, and I think that city just fit his kind of hipsterish personality as well, you know.
Yes.
So
Yes. Any other free agents that you feel will change locations?
not anyone that I care about as much. It'll
What about
be
Dwayne Wade?
I don't I think Dwayne Wade just wants more money and he will get it. I think he stays in Miami. Yeah.
Yep, All right.
Yeah, I mean, before we go, Kaushik, there's an Indian guy drafted in the NBA. Like, it
What?
happened. It happened. I'm gonna, like, when I get NBA 2K16 or 2K17, I'm gonna now have Satnam Singh from India. You know,
Hey,
I
you don't even need to wait that long. The next version of NBA will have it. They have D-League teams now too, I think.
Fantastic. No, I want him in the NBA. You know, whenever I used to, I mean, I've been playing these games from like NBA, I don't know, Live 98, I think,
Yep,
97, one of
99
those.
was the first one I played.
I used to get free demos from, I used to buy Chip Magazine. It was
Chip
a
Magazine.
company.
Oh my
Yeah.
God, I used to do the
Chip which
same
became Digit later, I think. And
Yes.
Chip used to give like those CDs of like demos. And
Yes.
that used to have the NBA Live demo where you could only play like the All-Star game or something. I remember
One
that.
half of the
One
All-Star
half of an
game.
All-Star game, yeah. And that got me into it. Like my brother and I used to always play those games, and then so I
Yes.
started buying all these games. And obviously the create a player option, there'd be Karan Madhok, number 15. That was always my number because of Vince Carter. And like, you know, rookie from India. And that
Yes,
was my
always.
big thing, you know, always like I had to like scroll all the way down and find India. You know
Yep.
what? That's actually gonna happen. It's Satnam Singh, rookie from India, is a real possibility for an NBA.
Yes, and I can't wait for the Dallas Mavericks store to start selling Satnam Singh jerseys. I know you bought it. I know you made the pick for people like me to buy these jerseys, but I
That's
will
fine.
anyway.
I might get myself a Texas Legends jersey or a t-shirt. I mean, if that's the D-League team he goes to. So I'm buying in. If the Mavericks if the Mavericks get Satnam on their roster, I've never particularly been a fan of that team. You know,
Yep, same
they've
here.
just been whatever, you know, for many years. But they might propel to second favorite just out of default because you know what, they have an Indian guy. So.
True, absolutely, absolutely. So on that surprisingly positive note, let's end episode 10. Hey, we're in double digits, Karan.
We're in double digits and Satnam's in the NBA, so things are going better for everybody here.
Yes. Let's continue that and spare our listeners of listening to us. I just wanted to say thanks to all of our listeners for I don't know whether how you view it, whether you put up with us, whether you enjoy us, whatever it is. Thank you for the support. Please continue to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. We're all over the place, like Indian basketball media. Indian media is suddenly in basketball. Like
For
everyone's got
one week. For one week, everyone.
for 1 week. Yep, and there's guys who cover stories on how Ludhiana's basketball academy has crappy rooms and stuff like that. Where was all this before Satnam got drafted? I think
My favorite thing are the listicles. Like everyone is telling me nine things I did not know about Satnam Singh.
Yes.
Everyone around the league. I'm like, yeah, thanks. By the way, I may sound like a cranky old dude, but I hate listicles. Write a proper article. Come on, guys.
Yeah, it can't be that difficult.
But yeah, as you said, like Indian basketball is everywhere. And by the way, we want to hear back from you guys. We want to hear back any criticisms you have, any questions you have, anything that you like what we're doing, anything that you don't like, you know, or if you just want to kind of share in the joy of the history Satnam's made. Get back to us and hopefully in our future episodes, whenever we have more free time and we don't babble on this much, we will get to answering your questions.
Yes, and we'll be back very soon. And thank you for, as always, for listening to Hoop Darshan. And until then, hashtag India basketball.